AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Welcome to the sixth episode of Beyond the Baseline Inside Fordham Basketball. I'm your host, Don Dwyer. We've got some updated rankings to talk about, and I've also got a solid roundtable discussion with Joe Budzelic from Stretching the Floor website and WFUV sports manager Joe Henry on campus. We talk a lot about the upcoming season and what they've seen in practice up to this point. The rankings are out. KenPom's preseason rankings released on Sunday. Fordham checks in at 182 with a projected 16-15 record, 5-13 in A-10 play. Fordham wins every game in the non-conference except for Game 4 against Iona on the road. The A-10 schedule looks rough, however, with home wins against LaSalle and Davidson as the highlights. So here's how KenPom works. These predictions are based on per-possession efficiency rather than simple stats like points per game. It calculates a team's adjusted offensive efficiency, points scored per 100 possessions, and adjusted defensive efficiency, points allowed per 100 possessions, adjusted for opponent quality and their tempo. A team's overall rating is derived from the difference between its offensive and defensive efficiency, and these ratings are used to predict future performance and explain team strengths. So here's the rest of the conference, just to put this all into perspective. Dayton ranked 54, VCU 60, SLU 65, GW 81, George Mason 91, Loyola Chicago 99, St. Joe's 109, Duquesne 110, Rhodey 112, Richmond 119, St. Bonaventure 122, Davidson 150, Fordham 182, and LaSalle 201. Coach has told some people that he's actually feeling good about beating his KenPom preseason ranking this year and hopes to make it 5 out of 6 years. I mean, anytime you hear a stat like that, you're excited about it, and I think he can do it in year one. I honestly think if everything goes to plan, they may even win 20 games this year. That non-conference is a bunny, but you know what? If you win 20 games, it's always a good thing. And it's 22 days until tip-off for the Rams as they host NJIT at the Rose Hill Gym. And I was thinking, who wore number 22 for the Rams recently? I decided to have a game with myself. So I'm taking the trip down memory lane, and let me see if you guys can remember some of these names on these lists. I'm going to start from most recent to some of the real former players. So most recently, walk-ons Brian Nussbaum and Peter Berquist are some of the most recent ones to wear number 22. Joel Soriano, when he was a Ram before transferring to St. John's. Jermaine Myers, a guard during the PCORA years. Another guard, Rainer Moquette, from the 2009 and 2010 squad. All these guys have worn number 22. Scott Harmatuk from the 96 to 2000 squads, who I'm actually scheduling an interview with soon. That should be a good one. And Rob Baxter from the 1995 squad from Binghamton, New York, spent some time up there. A beautiful area is the Southern Tier. He actually, Mr. Baxter, led the Patriot League in assist in 1993 with 180 and averaged 6.7 a contest. So just giving you a little history on who wore number 22. Some maybe probably way earlier than this, but this was just some of the few notables that I found after doing some research. If you have any more, leave them in the comments, because I really want to know some of these famous number 22s that were on campus. So hope you enjoyed that, and hope you had as much fun as I did that when putting it all together. Now, here's a final thing, a reminder that during homecoming this weekend on campus, there will be a morning conversation with AD Charles Guthrie and Coach Magpio called New Era, Fordham Basketball and Beyond. It's October 18th, 10:30 at the McShane Campus Center. You do have to register your spot and sign up. I'll leave a link in the comments below as well. And if someone does go, please report to me the details. I would love to share with everyone on this platform about what was discussed, what stood out, and what that vision will look like at Fordham. I think it's going to be a really good time and really motivate some people to get into the program even before the first game on campus. Well, that's this week's introduction, a short one, but a good one. Up next is my roundtable discussion about this year's team, coming up next.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
This week, we welcome in the Joe Show, Joe Henry, manager at WFUV Sports, and Joe Budzelic, the writer for his Stretching the Floor website, to talk about some Fordham basketball. Both have been to practices this month and can provide some insight on the team. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll start talking about, you know, the first practice. I know, Joe Henry, you were there. You mentioned high-intensity, coachable group. Just explain to people out there what a Coach Magpio practice actually looks like.
Yeah, it was funny. We were taking the over-under on whether or not they would bleed into volleyball's time. This team was taking their full practice slot and then some. I think they ran like 10 minutes late. And it's also a little, it's coincidental, but it's fitting that you'll hear efficiency thrown out all the time by Mike Magpio when he talks about his recruiting. But it goes beyond just offensive efficiency. It's actually, they talked about wanting to have the most efficient huddle possible. So every time that a drill broke up, they saw a foul or something that was going to have them regroup for a moment. It was immediately everyone knows where to go. There were two or three huddles, each with a different coach leading that huddle. And it was, when I talk about intensity, it wasn't just live ball on the floor. Guys were, you know, hustling, which was the case, but also in these huddles, I mean, straight eye contact, focus, acting like this is not just a practice, but a real game, which stood out to me, especially for a first practice for a group that was assembled on a whim in the later stages of spring.
And the other Joe, what did you notice?
A lot of stuff that Joe mentioned as well. It makes me think of a phrase that Coach Magpio talked about when I interviewed him after the practice. He calls it relentless accountability. And I think that's a lot of what Joe references, like the little things, like the little coachable things that are life lessons. Like he mentioned, like there was a guy who was, you know, just not fully locked into the discussion after that. And that's the stuff that he gets mad about. It's interesting because he's such like he's a, you know, down to earth, like affable guy, but then like the little qualities that help winning, like he really honed in on that. And that's just something that he talked about when building this team with the mix of the veterans that they brought in, but also just like the culture and the type of team that they want to kind of build and the program they want to build. That's a phrase he used all the time, relentless accountability. And then he hearkened that back to his time, with Kyle Smith and Kyle Smith of Columbia. He learned that from Randy Bennett as well. So he's coaching for the right reasons. Obviously, like, efficiency is a phrase we hear a lot in sports, with their offensive and defensive looks. But when you get to the meat of it, he wants to build a program of just really accountable guys who can, show up for each other, be resilient, just all those things that are super important on the basketball court, but then also, for the rest of our lives as well. So it's definitely a program that is doing things the right way, for sure.
That's what I like to hear. And a couple of things that both of you guys mentioned, team huddles, accountability, all those words are kind of, cultural things are team building, but they focus on things that aren't in the box score. They don't focus on shooting percentages, field goals. So we hear about analytics all the time from Coach Magpio and that coaching tree, like you just mentioned, Joe B. How was it implemented in practice at all?
Well, one thing he mentioned that I didn't even realize until we talked, until after the fact, like, oftentimes when they scrimmage or when they do like drills that look more like gameplay, like, oftentimes it'll be related on a specific analytical rating scale. So I mean, I can't really get into the specifics because I don't have that software or that algorithm, but like, they'll have a scrimmage where, like, literally their starting five will be based on a number shootout. So it'll be like, based on these metrics, these are our starters. And I think it kind of puts in the mindset of the players, like, what you are doing not only is like efficient on like the statistical aspect, but like certain hustle plays or certain softer skills or more high intensity skills, like in a basketball court, it could be applied that way. There's screens on the floor. Like, I'm sure Joe saw as well, like, after a certain drill, like, they would huddle over the real time, just video editing of like what went well, what needs to be addressed. And I feel like that's just like a really smart approach, especially with a brand new roster. Their growth potential is much more exponential in that sense, because there's really no wasted time. Like, you don't see a lot of milling around. The energy's good. It's a long practice, but it's a super efficient practice. There's not a lot of downtime. But it's done in a way that's, and coming from like my teacher aspect, it's done from a way of constructive feedback in a supportive nature, that uses analytics, but it still has the heart, which is super important as well.
And Joe Henry, do you see anything like that or anything different?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything that Joe B hit on is, that's what I observed too. And what struck me, yesterday I got to talk to a lot of the players for media day, and I don't think you usually see players be so bought in on he's got this analytics approach. But there are times when we'd ask them questions that didn't even have to do with analytics, but just about how the team is gelling or what they can expect to see on the floor this year, that kind of thing. They'd be like, well, with Magpio, it's all about analytics, finding out who's analytically the best fit on the floor and trying to play up to what the analytics say. And that stood out to me, like, whoa, like, these guys, they believe in this system, which is something that I think to get that level of buy-in in this short of a time, that stood out to me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And this roster is old. It's got those six or seven senior slash grad transfers. They're going to play a really solid offense. They're going to be efficient, like you just said. Joe B, you mentioned that European style of it. Good looking guards on this roster. Everyone can shoot. From watching them at practice, who stood out? I guess I'll start with Joe Henry. Who stood out?
I mean, Dejour Rees definitely the number one standout. I think he's going to be the number one point guard. And I talked to him yesterday about him handling primary ball handler duties, because his prior stops in college, he was more of a secondary off the ball guy, and a guy who scores a lot, but maybe doesn't. I think he averaged under two assists at Iona last year, but I think he's going to be their number one ball handler this season. And he said, like, at first it was a really weird adjustment, but now I really feel it clicking, and I feel like I'm thriving in that system. I think we saw that in that practice. He's someone who's just so He's such a steady presence when he has the ball. You have so much trust that he's going to make the right decision. Of course, it was just a practice, but that's the feeling that I got. And I thought just overall, and we'll talk more about it, the depth that this team has in the backcourt. There's so many options where, like, I don't even know where Dimitri Gardner fits into this team this year, but that's a guy who averaged 23 last year in D2. He's obviously extremely skilled off-ball guard. Christian Henry is a guy that I'm really high on. I know he's still working back from the wrist injury that he had, but he was playing in the practice. I think maybe he wasn't like a full go at that point. Like I was expecting him to run with the starters, and I think he was essentially on that like second unit team. But he's someone who can give you quite the scoring punch. And there's a lot of different kinds of guards too. Obviously, there's Reeves, there's Green, who's a typical 3-and-D guy. There's Henry, who's got that scoring focus to him, and then there's even Zareke Nutter, who has been described by Magpie as a point forward type. So there's a lot of different looks that I think this team can give you a lot of flexibility in the backcourt. And that's part of what I think could make this team dangerous is, and we'll probably talk about the front court, but there's so many different types of lineups they can throw out there, whether you wanted to put like an Akira Jacobs or someone at a small ball five, or you wanted to stack up a couple of bigs with Whitborn and Schulte. There's just so many different looks they can go to, and that's a testament to Magpie finding such a deep bunch of guys who have experience playing several different roles.
Yeah, Joby, you see that too?
Oh, Danny Reeves is, fits this group perfectly. I cover a lot of Iona hoops. I think one thing that's really special about Dede is, although the Fordham offense is going to be mostly like rim looks and 3-point looks, like he's kind of like an interior facilitator. Like he's fearless. There were tons of Iona games where he would just be like surrounded by like the other team's three biggest players, and he would just somehow dish out to like the open guy in the three or draw a foul or make a mid-range shot. Like I would imagine Reeves will have the most freedom in terms of how he can produce offense. If there's one guy who's gonna he'll if there's one guy that Magpie will be okay with mid-range looks, it'll be Dede. But to just add another player, I was super impressed with Louis Lesmond, the grad transfer from Harvard. He's like super versatile. Like he could play anywhere from like the big two at 6'6", 195 to like probably there's not enough depth or there's too much depth for this to work out, but on another team he could be like a small ball four. Smart player, a lot more athletic than I expected, scrappy, really quick feet. Like he's a like when I was looking at his defensive analytics, like he I think was rated like the third highest defensive analytics for Harvard last year, and Harvard wasn't a very strong defensive team. But I looking at his length, I was like, this guy is one of those guys who doesn't need the ball in his hands a lot to make an impact, but like he'll be in there late in the game as well because he can make a big shot as well. He's a guy I see like no weaknesses in his game. He probably won't lead the team in any statistical category, but in terms of how many different ways he could benefit this team, I could see him getting 30 minutes a game. Yeah, he was fantastic that practice.
Okay, that makes sense. I on that Magpio podcast that he started, he mentioned he wants to have a squad of a big three, Reeves, Henry, and then it was a combo between Nutter and Lesmond, the French version, Le Monde, however you want to say it, for that third spot. Could you guys see that in practice? I mean, Joe Henry, you mentioned his athleticism, and so did you, Joby. Is that what kind of stands out and makes him maybe that third person on that big three?
Yeah, I don't know. He feel in terms of role definition, I think he'd be more of just a role player and not someone you consider like a big three star player. But as Joby said, like I could see this guy getting 30 minutes a game and the athleticism, absolutely. This guy was the first out on every fast break, and then he was finishing with dunks that I did not know that Louis Lesmond could do. And I'm very excited, and Magpie talked about this when I spoke to him after the practice. He was in such a regimented system at Harvard offensively, and I feel like his offensive game really just scratched the surface there, and they could really see him have more freedom in this system, which makes me really curious about how he can impact the game as more than just like a corner shooter or a guy making an occasional cut. I think he could be a more dynamic piece to this offense, but I think the big three in terms of scoring would definitely be Reeves, Henry, and Nutter. and that's probably going to be the three guys doing a lot of the ball handling. Nutter was sidelined during the practice, I think just like a minor injury, but he should be good to go. They're all different players, but I think they're the guys that have scored the most at the highest levels. And beyond just that, I think eye test wise at the practice for Reeves and Henry is like, okay, these guys can get to their spots. These guys can facilitate better than I thought that they could. These are the two guys, and then add in Nutter that I think are going to be doing the bulk of the scoring and running the offense this year.
So go into the importance of role players then. I guess I'll ask you, Joe B, of having the ball with Reeves, but then he's got to find someone that's got to either shoot or get to the basket or find him in his spot. Go into the importance of who might be the most important role players, maybe on that starting five or even on the second team.
I don't think I could pick a one specific player. I just think the way that the front court's just gonna have a lot of mixing and matching. It's gonna be one of those matchup dependent situations where, I think Whitborn has the most long-term potential, but he's only a sophomore. Boss, the other redshirt freshman from UCR, like he had a fantastic practice. I think he has a lot of potential. Magpio said he's looking for him to get 8 to 10 minutes. We even like Jace Howard, like he's a guy who is a physical power forward. Like, I don't know if he's going to get minutes every game, but against like a bigger, more physical lineup, like he could get minutes at the four or even like a really big three. It's just like a big, strong dude who could just like battle down low. He's kind of built like a tight end in football. I guess that goes back to the point. Like, I'm not going to pick a specific player necessarily, but like the front court to me is just so diverse and like so multifaceted that like that's the box scores could look different every single game for that group. And I think because that group is so deep and so versatile, that could really be the biggest X factor of like Fordham's ceiling of whether Magpie could find the right mix and match this early, because that is the younger side of the roster, is the front court overall. So, like, I would say the overall group for the front court would be my pick.
And so one of the people that he mentioned, Coach Magpio, on A-10 Media Day in Pittsburgh on the Field of 68 interview, was he said Akira Jacobs is the X factor this year. He said if he can, advance his game from 8 points a game to 11, 12 points a game, that could really, take us to the next level. Is there someone else that caught your eye that might surprise us, or is Jacobs that X factor because of his shooting and his length and his size and that potential matchup nightmare that he talks about?
Well, let's talk about Jacobs first. I think it definitely could be construed as an X factor because he's someone who's still young and learning and working, I think, on his discipline. But he's someone who, in a Hawaii system, wasn't much more than a floor spacing stretch four who also sometimes would cut. And in a Magpio offense, I think he could take on a more dynamic role off of the ball where he could do those things, but maybe at a higher frequency and just have a higher usage rate overall. And obviously, 6'10", the length that he brings at the power forward position isn't really something that this Fordham team has had in recent years. So I think that he absolutely is an X factor, and I think he has the skill set to, I mean, a 6'10" big who can shoot and cut and has a great vertical and maybe can improve his defense interior. That's someone who could absolutely be an X factor. For me, I think X factor is probably Zariq Nader. He's a proven scorer at the D1 level. But this is really, he talked about how he was brought in here. We asked him about his role yesterday, and he said, "I don't feel like my role has changed. It's just bigger. And now I'm brought in, I'm expected to be the leader of this team, and I have so much experience, and I need to make sure that the younger players are growing under my leadership." And so, intangibly, in a sense of leadership, I think he could be an X factor. Can he rise to the task of being a team leader? But also, this is a guy who's probably the biggest matchup nightmare offensively. 6'7" guy who can handle the rock and facilitate as well. I think if he has the season that I think he could have, where he takes a step up even from his Georgia State numbers, that he could be the best player on this team.
Wow, Joe B, going a little bit about Jacobs, and then maybe if you have a different X factor as well.
Jacobs is a guy that he had like going back to his role at Hawaii, like watching him shoot, like he has probably the softest shot in the on the team. Like even his misses would like roll off the rim. Like his beautiful form. He could hit threes from NBA range and deep. I just think the biggest thing that the coaching staff is looking for with him is like, how can they redevelop his confidence in a way that he could kind of see himself to the forward that they see him becoming? And, you know, Joe H mentioned that as well. I noticed like, I think the staff coaches him a little harder than the other guys on the team necessarily. I think because they want him to see how great he could become. So that's obviously exciting to hear because when you look at his stats from Hawaii, like you see a useful player. But then when you extrapolate that to what his role could become, especially, you know, he's a guy who I could see his role increasing and then maybe just be like a senior leader next year in the front court. I mean, I could go back to talking about like Zarik Nutter as well. Like he compared when I was talking to coach after the practice, he has a really good just network of Big West coaches that he talks about, and then UC San Diego. He kind of wants to model Nutter's game against Tate Jones, the basically like the point forward for UC San Diego, who shot enough threes to keep teams honest, but really Nutter does his best cutting and just kind of facilitating off the bounce and off the dribble. And I think nowadays in the A10, you need a guy like him who could just take the rock, use his size and his length to create. The Fordham has really good guards, but they don't have a guy like him who could, he could be the three, like he could be the starting three and then open up the space for more front court guys to play. But he's also talented enough and physical enough to play the four as well. So he really opens the door for a lot of possibilities of what the staff wants to do with this lineup.
I'm super excited about seeing Zarik Nutter. Everyone just keeps mentioning that name, and you guys are mentioning really good things about his game that I think a lot of people are excited to see. Let's talk a little international here, and a guy that I keep hearing about, and I'm sure you guys noticed it too, was Ruah Carr, 6'7" freshman from Australia. I've seen film, and everyone who messaged me at that open practice on October 2nd said this guy can't miss, and he's the real deal. I guess I'll start with Joe Henry because you said something pretty special about this guy that MacPio said. What makes him so special?
Yeah, Roar was, along with Louis, he was the standout of the practice that I went to. Just didn't expect a true freshman to look that polished. You said that, Joby, you said that Jacobs has maybe the smoothest form. I think Roar is right up there. And he's also a guy who thrives cutting and getting lobs and getting the ball inside. He's a skinny guy. He still like probably could get a little bit bigger to play against A10 competition. And MacPio said he's the best NBA prospect that we have, and he doesn't even know it. And I told him that yesterday, Roar, and he just kind of smiled and was like, "Oh, that's great." And then I was like, "You said that you'd hit a game winner in four of the last five practices," and he's like, "Yeah." He's very, very down to earth, very humble about it. So very easy guy to root for, and a guy whose skill set and physical acumen tells me that he could really develop into something. But of course, as we've talked about, this team has a lot of depth, so I'm not really sure where he figures in year one. But what Matt Pio told me was, I don't know how I could not play this guy, which really stood out to me. It sounds like maybe he wasn't planning on it the same route that a boss took last year when he redshirted and didn't play. Feels like Roar is so polished as a freshman that he's going to get some run, which is pretty cool.
No, that's awesome. And just to go into a little bit more with that athleticism, Joe B. The guy's long, lanky. He sounds like a Magpio type of guy.
Yeah, it's like he's listed at 6'7". Like I think when all was said and done, like he could be 6'9", 6'10". Like when I saw him on the gym, I'm like, I was comparing him to the other guys that were 6'7". I'm like, I think he's taller than that. I think also defensively, like Joe H talked about his offensive capabilities, but Magpio mentioned that defensively they want to use their length. They're not going to be like overly pursuing for turnovers like the previous Fordham teams we've seen the last couple of years, but they want to use their length to make it really hard for the opponents to take quality shots and then kind of clog up the lane to kind of, you know, have pick six opportunities. And then when you look at Roar's body type, just his length, and his activity and his quickness, like he has guard quickness. He's still getting used to kind of the finer motor aspects of playing at the D1 level, but I could see a guy like him where as he gets more reps and as he grows physically, both like by height and by strength and conditioning, like he could be a really dynamic player. Obviously, like when you mention NBA prospects, like NBA teams love that length, they love athleticism. And sometimes they prioritize that over skill set and basketball IQ. But he's at a system where he could, you know, he's got great coaches. Obviously, like Ryan Hyland's in there. He's came from a fantastic D3 program at John Jay locally. So they got some smart coaches that develop the right way. And he'll be utilized in a way where they're not going to sacrifice his potential by just using him just for his size and his athleticism. I could really see them wanting to reach the ceiling that they think they could get with him.
No, that makes sense. And I love all those little tidbits that you guys mentioned about him. I'm oozing about his potential and what he could be. R throughout this talk, we've been talking about high offensive efficiency. You know, that's what coach wanted in the portal. Let's talk about the defense now. You mentioned some of the ways that they've been playing defense. I know the front court has size, but not that traditional big, or as coach calls, girth manning the center spot. What did you notice about the defense, about this squad during a practice?
Yeah, it's funny. You're going to hear a lot of mixed discourse about the size of this team because I think maybe from someone like Joby's perspective, compared to the A10, you could say, I don't know if this team has enough size, not from a length standpoint, but from a literal size and girth standpoint. But then from a Fordham fan's perspective, this is the biggest team we've had in a long time. So there's a ton of length. I think Whitborn was someone who stuck out to me yesterday when I met him, just in terms of size. He's a lot bigger than I thought. He's not just this lengthy guy. He's actually a guy who I could see boxing out some of these A10 bigs. So is that's someone who I'm really high on as this team's starting five. But then you have so many options at the four between Schulte and Jacobs and Bodija. And length, as Joby said, is going to be paramount because this is a team that at the one through three positions has a ton of switchability and a lot of guys who have track records of being pests and forcing turnovers, Day-Day Reeves chief among them. But then on the interior, you have a lot of guys who maybe aren't going to win a lot of strength battles, but have crazy reach. I was watching Bowditch's tape the other day at Australia, and he just reaches over guys. Like he doesn't even really need to jump. He's just really, really long. So there's a lot of guys like that. So I think one big thing to watch for a non-conference play would be when the ball gets inside, can this team avoid the ball from getting like right into the restricted area, but have it be maybe more in the low post or in the mid post where these guys' length can really terrorize these interior players? Because I think once you get too deep inside, I'm not sure this team is big enough to stop plays that get that far. But with their length and switchability on the perimeter, I think they could prevent entry passes that get far enough inside where it's easy buckets for teams, and that's where this front court can thrive in the little mid post area where there's a few feet between the offensive player and the basket.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And just go into maybe some of their footwork. Do the bigs have good enough footwork to move side to side to get to their spot, or guards to be able to help out and get to a certain spot where they don't put the bigs, or they don't put their wings in a spot where they can't succeed defensively?
It's hard to, I mean, the practice was, they practice hard. And there's just good athleticism up and down the lineup. We talked about the guards. And then maybe there are guys that aren't going to play as much are pretty decent athletically. Like I mentioned Jace Howard. We talked about Roar. Like there's guys that are quick to defend. Like I don't know what Jace Howard's offensive upside is for next year necessarily, but he's a load to handle. So I think that's something that could be an aspect to consider. I was just, as Joe Henry gave a fantastic summary of, this the one thing I want to point out. I think a really important non-conference game to see how Fordham could be against bigger teams would be the LIU home game because LIU is going to be easily the best team in the Northeast Conference. They're huge. Like I cover them. I previewed their team earlier this summer. Like they're gonna have like Greg Gordon, for those who Iona fans who are familiar with this game, like he's gonna be potentially like their two guard. He's 6'5", 220. So, and they have, you know, multiple 7-footers. They're huge and they're physical, and they Malachi Davis, he loves pen he's a 6'4", 205 point guard who's going to penetrate and go inside. So that's going to be a really interesting test, because Fordham will be favored in that game, but that's a game where I would circle. I think that's going to be a physical, challenging game. LAU obviously isn't up to the standards of other teams in the conference, but that's going to be a test. Just looking at the lineup of their non-conference games entering that game, like I don't really see a team that would be as much of a physical load to handle right off the bat. But LAU would be a really interesting litmus test early in the season to see how that would be.
No, appreciate that. I'm interested in that. Iona, Holy Cross, and Manhattan obviously are the ones that everyone's looking forward to those games. How deep do you think this rotation is going to be? Coaches sometimes go to their main eight or 10. Do you see coach going to a bigger 12-man rotation and using a little bit of everyone and going, okay, if I put this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, we're going to get 4 minutes of high efficiency with this group out there. What are some of your thoughts on maybe what a rotation would look like?
I think by the nature of how this team came together and just needing to fill 12 scholarship spots, coach found a lot of guys who are worthy of playing time. I think at Riverside, they mainly ran a 9-man rotation last year. So maybe during conference play, that's what it trims down to. But there's so many guys that you look at as far as this team specifically goes that are fringe rotation guys, that you think in other years on a Fordham team would probably have bigger roles. So I talked about Dimitri Gardner. Abbas, I think, will definitely be a part of the rotation. Roarcore is a question mark. Jace Howard. These are guys, Ryan Pettis and Kingston Price. Like, we don't really know what the returners are how they're going to figure into this team, because the backcourt is so stacked. But these are all guys that you'd expect to see time. And that's one of the benefits of having a non-conference schedule that's this soft, is that you have time and flexibility to start running deeper rotations and get to actually see some of these guys play, which I think could be really beneficial for a lot of the younger guys that I just mentioned, like Roar and Kingston and Ryan, who haven't seen a ton of run. Like Kingston literally didn't play last year. I don't even really know what kind of a player he is. But I think some of these games against a couple of these D2 schools is where you could see this rotation really deepening, and you can actually get a taste of what these players can bring. Maybe not this year, but when there's so many graduate guards on this team, if Kingston and Ryan stay, they could have a much bigger role as upperclassmen.
Yeah, and even add to that, like even Marcus Green, like he had a bad year at Hawaii. Like, just let's be honest, 7 points per game and 30% from three. And then the previous season, 15 points a game and 43% from three. Granted, at Houston Christian, which is in a conference that isn't as difficult as the Big West. He's a guy at the practice that I was at. When I commented to the coach that I didn't see him miss a 3-point shot the entire game, he's like, good. He's like, that's. Because he's a guy who, he feels down about it. Like, he might feel down about his performance last year with Hawaii because it wasn't up to the standard that Marcus wanted, because he had such a great year the previous year. And that's another guy who, had 15 points a game in the D1 level. We mentioned Dimitri Gardner. Like, he adds an element because he's a big guard. Like, when I saw him, he's built like a wide receiver. Like, he's a muscular, strong lower base. 6'4", 210. Like, sometimes I think fans lament on the fact when there's D2 opponents or non-D1 opponents in their non-conference, but I think this is actually a perfect team and a perfect situation to have that, to kind of work out the kinks of those lineups. Because I think it would be remiss not to play everybody in some capacity in those two games. Maybe not play everybody in each game, but I think that's a perfect opportunity to get every player in at least one of those games, just to at least see what they could add to the court once the games start counting.
No, that makes sense. I'm still high on Ryan Pettis, and the only reason why is the dude has so much athleticism, and I've seen him in the offseason work on his shot. And if he could work on his shot and maybe take over the role as like a point guard down the line, maybe not even this year, but next year, and give you those high energy moments, like no one has ever talked about him, and I still believe in him. So I'm hoping he has a big season this year, and he gets some of those in some of those early games. I and like I said, we know it's all early, but did you guys see a clear leader on this team? Is it lead by example, or is there actually a guy in those mini huddles that is basically being the voice and talking and saying, "Hey guys, we got to do this better. Hey, I noticed you were over here. What did you guys see?"
Couple things. I think Day-Day Reeves would be my pick to be the leader of this team. He's not like the most outspoken guy. There's some very outspoken, funny guys in this roster, like Akira and Jace. They're like, met them yesterday. They can't stop cracking jokes. Day-Day Reeves is more reserved, but he's a lead by example kind of guy, I would say. And he's literally probably going to be the point guard for most of the minutes on this team. So he fits into that leadership role for me. In the huddles, the way that they were doing, and I think it was. I think Magpie talked about this in the Bogish podcast was they're intentionally having like separate huddles with separate assistant coaches leading those huddles as if they were real huddles. And so there was a coach speaking, and I didn't really notice like a player being the vocal leader in that sense. But the other thing that I wanted to talk about was overwhelmingly when we spoke to the players yesterday, they said that there's no cliques on this team. There's no like no one has any bad blood with anyone else. There's no like lack or weak strand in the chemistry that this team has. It's a very united group, especially compared to the circumstances that they were assembled in. You wouldn't expect this team to be as tight as they are, but that's what really stuck out to us all is like when they were waiting to interview with us, they were all just hanging out outside, like every single one of them talking, having fun. They were all super outgoing to us and welcoming. And it's so Mike Pyle talked a lot about wanting high character guys who want to be here. Those two things stuck out. And while it's probably hard to identify a true leader through just observing one practice, I would say my biggest takeaway about the team from a makeup standpoint was that this is a really bought in and together group, which is really cool.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. It's hard to say with the huddle because of the factors that Joe H mentioned. I think of it as like a late game situation, like when you have a lead and you want to preserve that lead. When you look at Day-Day Reeves, like he's a closer. Like he'll get fouls, he'll get to the line, he'll make shots. He's ice veins. Christian Henry, he's another like ball dominant. He played point guard at EMU. He has like high 70%. Free throw percentage, and he could generate fouls, get to the bucket. So, like, I think of those as like the veterans that are just like they play within the system because obviously, like Magpie is a really good system. But like in those late game sessions, when you just need to have one or two guys who could get the ball in their hands and just like create offense, or like when you have the lead and just put pressure on the defense, like those are the guys who I would trust in late game situations for sure. That I would be, it would, I think it would be really hard to not picture either of those two guys, even though it would be a smaller lineup with both those guys on the floor late game at times. Like that would be like a rock star group of guards to finish a game.
Awesome. And a lot is going on with this program. I mean, the recruits coming in, getting younger. We already got a Stepanak kid coming in, Hassan Kurasi, Frank Siakabay, a big from Virginia, and then bringing in a Boston guy, Bullet Jr. Just kind of go into, I don't know if you've been following the recruiting process, but like I feel like most coaches want to go just old, like we've seen Coach Magpio do right now, but then he's infusing young talent for this program for the future. What do you see? Do you like this future vision for Fordham that they're getting younger and some of these they're bringing in top 100 type players? I'm excited for the future. I don't know if you guys been noticing or have any thoughts about that as well.
I haven't watched any of the guys' tape, and I've historically not been super locked in on recruiting, except for ironically, right before Ergo got fired, I was following his recruits very closely, and then obviously they all decommitted. So I haven't really taken a look at any of these guys' games, but the two things that stand out to me are one, targeting guards, because this is a really old group of guards and a lot of them are going to graduate. So finding guys that can grow up in this system, which I think is a very guard-friendly system that gives ball handlers a lot of freedom in terms of decision making. So that's exciting. And also targeting local guys. Pio, as I said, talks so much about finding guys that really want to be here and be part of something special at Fordham, and finding guys that are here in New York. Like, I think Cromessi is a New York native. That's something that I think is a priority to him. And it's cool to see him get guys like that, because I think there's only, what, one, two, maybe two, three New York natives on this roster, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be super interesting because Ergo brought in some pretty high-level high school prospects. Like Will Richardson didn't really work out. Angel Montas. Like there's guys that they brought in. And I thought one of the benefits of Ergo was we saw some of the highest quality of, like, in terms of rating or like potential based on different like scouting services. Like they got high grades. I wasn't expecting that necessarily with Magpio, but like, according to 24/7 Sports, like they've already brought in two top 250 guys for 2026, and that would rank amongst like the top like 15 all-time recruits for Fordham according to that website. So like the fact that obviously Magpie was prioritizing character and more intangibles and skill, yet still getting, you know, really solid three-star prospects with room to grow, like it's pretty impressive. Like it's, if you're a Fordham fan, like obviously you're excited about this year, but then when you already have these three guys you could just plug in, you can imagine for next year, especially how thin the backcourt's going to be next year. Like you could kind of imagine, oh, like the front court could develop because they're all, you know, aside from Jace, like they could all play next year. And then obviously when, you know, Zarik and Christian and DeJour, they all graduate, and Marcus, Dimitri, there's a new, kind of a foundation that could build upon. And then obviously like the portal is going to address that as well. So I think overall, like I think the group has a really diverse mindset of like how they want to approach roster building. Like they're not looking for quick fixes. Obviously this is an older team to kind of set the culture, but I think in long term, the key is stability, the key is growth, and the key is like sustaining success. And obviously like Magpio, he took a program of UCR that was just didn't win. They in the D1 level, they just weren't winning. And then they had three of their best seasons under his leadership. And I just think I can't imagine a better coach to bring into the system, because essentially Fordham hasn't won in a long time. So he's essentially building from the ground up at a location that just has so much potential and so much growth that can happen. So I think it's a really smart way to address it.
So my last thing is, what do you think this year is going to bring in year one for Coach Magpio? What do you see happening at the Rose Hill Gym? Just final thoughts on this Fordham Rams squad.
So it's a loaded question. I'm an optimist, so I'm excited. I think if nothing else, it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think one of the many perks of a non-conference schedule like this is that it's going to engage a student body that might not be super locked in on what's been going on in the Fordham men's basketball universe. But when they see those wins stack up, which I think is what's going to happen with a team like this against the opponents they're facing, it's going to start getting people in the building. And as we heard Coach Ergo talk about so many times the past few years, when Rose Hill turns into Rose Thrill, then it becomes a huge home court advantage. That's something that Magpio talked about to me last week, was that he can already feel how loud it gets in practices. He can only imagine how difficult it will be for other teams to communicate when there's a full fan base in here. So I think my keys in non-conference play is deepening the rotation and figuring out what lineups are going to be your go-to lineups in different game situations, and then also engaging the student body and getting people in the building, because I think that's a whole different asset beyond any player could give you come conference play. And then this team was projected last in the conference. I don't think that's crazy because no one knows much about them, but I would be very surprised if they finished that way.
I'm just looking at the schedule right now. Like if you look at the home games, obviously like it's a weaker non-conference schedule. But even when you look at the A10 schedule, like the meat of their schedule tends to be away. Like George Mason's going to be tough. I'm just talking about home games. Like George Mason will be tough. I think Duquesne is better than what the media day projected. Obviously VCU and Loyola are good, but then you look at you're going to have LaSalle, Davidson, URI. You're going to finish the last two home games are going to be against Davidson and Rhode Island that are, two in the bottom half teams in the A10. And kind of like what Joe H was mentioning, like there's Rose Thrill opportunities. Like it's New York City. The place gets so loud. And the way that the A10 tournament is set up, like those could be some really big home games at the end of the season with Davidson and Rhode Island that could really, allow them to possibly skip around in the A10 or really make that winnable games and just like meaningful games late in the year. It's hard to say what their record would be. I just my hope and I think what I think would happen is regardless of what the A10 record is and their overall record, because their non-conference is pretty weak. I would imagine fans would feel more hopeful at the end of this year. Hypothetically, even if they have a similar record to last year, because they see the areas of growth that could kind of be projected to the future, where I feel like Fordham fans last year and the previous year were leaving a little bit sour of just like, this is it. Like, this is all we could muster. Like, after, their incredible season of all the wins. I think fans will be excited at the end of the year, is my prediction.
Hey, I like it. I like it. Both of you guys have been a fan. I've been a fan for 20 plus years. Optimism just lives in me with this squad. I've been through 4-win teams, 9-win teams, and 25-win teams. So I've seen it all. And I just want Rose Hill rocking again because when I was a ball boy as a teenager, and that Rose Hill gym is rocking. One, it's impossible to dribble the ball. And two, it's impossible to hear your teammates, especially even in huddles and stuff, you can't even hear each other. So I'm just excited that that atmosphere comes back and it gets that way because that's what it's all about. And people just bleeding the maroon and white and having a good time. And that's what I'm hoping for. So I appreciate you guys taking some time talking to me about them. And hope I get out to a game and see you guys soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much, Don. Have a good one.
Yep, you too. Thanks, guys. I want to thank both Joes for taking time to talk to me. Joe Budzelik is a teacher and Joe Henry is a student. So getting that figured out took some time, but I really appreciate their insight into this year's team. I'm excited to see them for myself and watch the first couple of games on ESPN+. As for interviewing some former players, I've had a ton reach out to me in the last week saying that they are wanting to talk to me and interested. The list is around 5 to 6 former players, so I am super excited about scheduling those interviews and hoping that you've been enjoying those conversations that I've had. It's been a lot of fun to do them, and I hope you feel the same way when you listen. I'm so excited for the names coming up. You're going to be very excited to hear some names come back and talk Fordham basketball. Remember to rate and review the podcast. Tell me how I'm doing and what you like about this show. I appreciate you listening and subscribing to the show. Have a great week, and as always, go Rams!
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warm season's greetings to you all. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.